You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. This week we're covering the Order of the Solar Temple as part of our cult history segment. So, and this is going to be an interesting one, to say the least. We're not going to waste too much time on ceremony. Got a minor announcement for you guys. I just released my newest collection of poetry. It's all based in the genre of horror. It's my take on popular folklore, popular scary stories, but also the creation of my own horror universe, in which I have created and cultivated a world where nightmares reign supreme. So if you're interested in the genre of horror, if you like scary things, check out my new book, Galerie de Cauchemar, Nightmare Gallery, on Amazon. It's available now, so you guys can check that out. Let's go ahead and get started. You guys came here about the Order of the Solar Temple, and that's what we're going to get into. So the Order of the Solar Temple, in full, their name is the International Order of Chivalry Solar Tradition. It was a small, New Age religious movement founded in Geneva in 1984, and it's probably best known for the mass murder-suicide of 74 of its members between the years of 1994 and 1997. This organization had, like many cults, had a rather interesting and intricate beginnings. But unlike some of them, this one, their beginnings were not particularly humble. The Solar Temple was founded in Geneva, as I said, in 1984 by Luc Jouret, a homeopathic physician and a New Age lecturer, along with an associate of his named Joseph de Monbro. Its headquarters were later moved to Zurich, where a leadership council of 33 members presided, along with regional lodges, in which they set up all over the place in Europe and across the world to perform initiation ceremonies and other rites from Switzerland, Canada, and basically all over the world. Now, the Solar Temple attempted to trace its history to the revival of the Knights Templar. For those of you unfamiliar with them, they were a semi-military slash religious slash business organization. I know that's going to sound very weird, but they were a conglomerate of soldiers, businessmen, tradesmen, and this organization was a military arm of the church for a while, founded in the 12th century, and they were later, because of their power and influence, suppressed by the papal command in 1312. Now, they attempted to trace their history to this organization's revival in the years after the French Revolution, where they got their order kind of gained a little bit of steam again, but they never reached the influence and power that they had following the Crusades after they left the quote-unquote Holy Land with mass wealth. They became a direct threat to monarchs and the church. They had to be stomped out. So they were later accused of being heretics, pagans, devil worshippers, you name it, they were called it, and they were brutally suppressed following their rise to power. And they didn't really get much influence again until the French Revolution. Now, in 1805, Bernard Raymond Fabry Palaprat claimed to be the head of the Knights Templar and attempted to recreate the order. His group split into several factions, some of which developed the belief in the imminent end of the world. And before founding the Solar Temple, Charette had belonged to a descendant of one of these factions, the Renewed Order of the Temple. Now, before we proceed any further, guys, this is just a brief introduction to what the Solar Temple is based on. I do want to remind you all that you are free to call in at any time to just discuss, ask questions, as long as you just keep it polite and appropriate. The call-in number, as always, is 718-508-9883. I'd like to give you guys a little brief introduction before I toss that out there. See, guys, you get a little something there. Now, as we return to talking about the Solar Temple and their attempts to trace themselves to one of these many factions that split off the renewed group, before founding the Solar Temple, Jiray had belonged to a descendant of one of these factions, the Renewed Order of the Temple. Now, integral to the teachings of the Solar Temple was the belief that the world would face a worldwide catastrophe in the mid-1990s. In anticipation of this apocalyptic event, members believed it was necessary to enter a higher spiritual plane. Now, this is where, before we proceed to talking about what that means, because that, as you can probably guess, it's going to be, it's not going to be good for most of these people. But before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit more about these founding members, because I think it's important we get a taste for who these guys are. It's always good to have an idea of who we're dealing with here. So we're going to start with Luke Jarrett, if we can. And I'd like to remind you guys, am I going to condone the actions of these people? This is just to provide you with some insight into why they do the things that they do, and to help you recognize what cults, where cults come from and what they are. So we look at Luke Jarrett. He was born in October 1947, October 18, 1947, and he would end up being one of the members that died from the Order of the Solar Temple on the 5th of October 1994. He was born in Kikwit, Belgian Congo, and was a Belgian religious group leader in Switzerland, and would later also get involved with some neo-Nazis, just because, why not? He later, with Joseph de Bombro in 1984, founded the Order of the Solar Temple, also known as the Order of the Solar Tradition. So let's get a little bit into him. We know he was born in Belgian Congo. His parents later returned to the homeland in the 1950s, and Jiray attended the Free University of Brussels, from which he received his medical degree. During his college years, he joined the Walloon Communist Youth, which resulted in the police placing him under surveillance, because that's what ends up happening when you join communist organizations during that period. You end up under police surveillance. He graduated with his medical degree in 1974. 2 years after his graduation in 1976, he joined the Belgian Army and became a paratrooper. While in the Army, he participated in the Battle of Colwezi, a joint French and Belgian airborne operation, which resulted in the liberation of hostages from the city of Colwezi. Following his time in the Army, he began a formal study of homeopathy and qualified as a homeopathic practitioner in France. He traveled widely studying various forms of alternative and spiritual healing, and it is known that he visited the Philippines in 1977 and later stated that he visited China, Peru, and India. At the beginning of the 1980s, he settled in Annemasse, France, not far from the Swiss border, and began to practice homeopathy there. He continued to lecture widely on holistic health and the paranormal and invited those who responded to him into a Menta Club, later renamed the Atlanta Club. Among the groups from which he lectured was the Golden Way Foundation, a New Age group in Geneva, Switzerland, and he became close friends with the foundation's leader, Joseph de Bombro. De Bombro had been a Rosicrucian, and Jiray, in 1981, affiliated with the Renewed Order of the Temple, an occult order founded in the 70s by Julian Rodriguez, and so on and so forth. They soon discovered their mutual interests, and in 1984, together founded the Solar Temple. By this time, Jiray was traveling widely through French-speaking Europe, Eastern Canada, and Martinique as an inspirational speaker. While de Bombro directed the group from behind the scenes, Jiray was its outward image and primary recruiter. The Solar Temple wedded the Templars' tradition to the New Age. It drew its authority in part by an appeal to a lineage of Grand Masters that was claimed to go back to the medieval Order of the Temple that was suppressed at the beginning of the 14th century. I mentioned that at the beginning of the show. De Bombro assigned members a specific and significant role as agents to bring the New Age into visible presence into the world. The temple offered a program of personal spiritual progress through the practices and rituals that invoked the power of the Great White Brotherhood to bring forth the New Age. Jiray led a grow growing organization through the 80s, but in the 1990s, troubles began to plague the temple. Members began to leave, DeMondo fell ill, and authorities in several countries began to investigate its activities. The two leaders, Jurey and DeMondo, became increasingly pessimistic, especially after Jurey was arrested for attempting to purchase three handguns with silencers in Quebec, and the incident was widely reported in the media, and it destroyed his reputation there. And before we continue on, let's shift our attention to his partner in crime, his PIC, Joseph DeMondo. Because when we look at these two individuals, they come from similar backgrounds, but they also have, they're also involved with organizations. Yes, they're both involved with cult-like, with very occult, hidden secret societies. This is not the only thing that unites these two men. They come from very esoteric backgrounds. So Joseph DeMondo was born on August 19th, 1924, in Pont-Saint-Esprit, France. And he and Jurey, as I have mentioned many times already, founded the Order of the Solar Temple. Now, as co-founder, he led these people in their organization to their ultimate demise. Now, he was a member before this of the Rosicrucian Order. And if you're not familiar with the Rosicrucians, they're still around today. They've been around for a very long time. They're the Order of the Rose Cross. And it isn't really all that difficult to become involved with them now, but there was a time where it was a little bit more difficult to become involved with the Rosicrucians. Now you just have to have money. They're a community of mystics who study and practice the metaphysical laws governing the universe. They were founded in 1915 by H. Spencer Lewis, and it's a spirit. Now their entire organization traces its lineage to a spiritual and cultural movement called Rosicrucianism that developed in Europe during the early 17th century after the publication of several controversial texts. And originally, it was one of those organizations in the 1600s that tapped into a plethora of sources, as they were wont to do during this time in a period of such flux. But this original movement focused and emphasized on looking at esoteric pieces of literature from all over the world. They combine references to the Kabbalah, Hermeticism, alchemy, and mystical Christianity, old pagan practice. They basically took from everywhere that they could to cultivate their own idea about how the world was shaped and discovering the secrets of the human mind and the secrets of the universe. So they're fascinating. They have a fascinating history. But now today they're a little more than a rich organization of people who probably still believe in some of that stuff, but now you just pay your membership. Now, as I said before, a segue there, DeMondo, his life is a little bit more mysterious than Jurey. His early life we don't know a whole lot about. What we do know is that he was involved with the Rosicrucian Order from 1956 to the late 60s. This international spiritual group was founded in the early 1900s by H. Spencer Lewis, and it encouraged people to find themselves, drawing from centuries of metaphysical and mystical knowledge. After leaving the organization, DeMondo experienced some legal troubles in France because of some of his financial misdealings. Imagine that. In 1978, DeMondo established the Golden Way in Geneva, in Switzerland, basing his group in part on the mythology and beliefs of the Templar Knights. He attracted some affluent followers. It's a shame that DeMondo didn't just apply everything that he learned from Rosicrucianism. I mean, if he just could have turned lead into gold, he would have never had financial troubles. But I digress. Now, after founding the Golden Way, he created a communal living house in France. DeMondo wanted to expand his group, but he knew that he needed a much more inspirational leader to do that. He would later meet Luc Jurey, a reportedly charming doctor who led a group called the ARC. Together, they formed the
Order of the Solar Temple, OST, in 1984. Not to be confused with ODST, you Halo players. I know that some of you are listening. Jure gave lectures and talks in Switzerland, France, and Canada to attract new members, while DeMombro ran and managed the group's finances, although he claimed to be working under the direction of never-seen masters. So strong was his authority over the group's members that, according to an article in the New York Times, DeMombro even decided when female cult members could have children and what the children's names would be. In the mid-1980s, he moved to Quebec, Canada, and established a new headquarters for OST in a former monastery there. Along with its interest in the Knights Templar, the group incorporated astrology, medieval legend, and Christianity in its belief, because why not? It was largely comprised of upper and middle class people, primarily from Canada and Switzerland. See, if you want to be a part of this cult, you got to pay to play, baby. At its peak in the 1980s, it was believed to have more than 400 members. With money from his followers, DeMombro bought real estate in countries around the world, including Australia, France, Switzerland, and Canada. While Jure talked publicly about environmental issues and the end of the world, DeMombro led their followers through elaborate ceremonies, which included guided meditations and prayer. He claimed that his son Eli had been created by theogamy, or marriage of the gods, and that his daughter Emanuela had been conceived without sex. So this guy was really on some of that I'm really Jesus stuff. But membership began to decline, and the group's activities were under investigation in Canada in 1991 after that Jure scandal. Around this time, most of the group, including DeMombro and Jure, moved to Switzerland, but the change of location did nothing to assuage the two leaders' concerns. Sometimes referred to as the dictator, DeMombro was under increased scrutiny from outside and inside the group. Even his own son, Eli, began to question the existence of DeMombro's so-called masters as well as his spiritual abilities. How could you do this to me, son? You've betrayed me. Thought I could trust him, but he turned on me. So now we kind of got a background for DeMombro and Luke Jure and what they're kind of all about. Let's get a little bit more into the temple and what they're doing. What are they doing? So the Solar Temple, in a way, is one of several of the 20th century's new religious movements whose end occurred in acts of murder / suicide. The apparent affluence of the temple's membership challenged the prevailing conception of such incidents as the product of deprivations experienced by members and suggested a more ideological causation. The group seems to have survived the tragic events of the 90s and the early 21st century, which we'll get into as well. But I want to talk a little bit more about the order itself and the pipe dream that's being sold. So we talked about the values of the Knights Templar, right? We talk about this. This group bears striking similarities to another group we've talked about, Heaven's Gate. To put it mildly, Joseph DeMombro's followers were brainwashed to believe that he was a member of the 14th century Christian Order of the Knights Templar in a previous life, and that his daughter Emanuela was the cosmic child, and that they would be led to a planet which orbits the star Sirius after their deaths. Now, the order itself really consisted of mostly just a lot of nonsensical ceremonies, all in really designed to distract and control the people involved with the cult. And we're going to look at some of this nonsense momentarily. So just like any other cult, money, sex, and power played a key role in the organization. The central authority was the synarchy of the temple. The members were secret, headquartered in Zurich, Switzerland. There were lodges in Canada, Australia, Switzerland, Martinique, and other countries. The activities were a mixture of early Christianity and various Freemason rituals. Several affluent Europeans were secret members of the group, and the lodges had altars, rituals, and costumes. Please tell me bird masks. No, guys, no bird masks. Sorry, no bird masks. Just really weird robes. Dre himself saw himself as the Christ reborn. He became obsessed with sex and was having intercourse with one of the female members before each ritual to give him strength for the upcoming ceremony. The members handed over their money and adhered to strict rules. Their property became part of the organization's property, which is a fancy way of saying, now that we have your money and we're basically going to screw you guys over, now you can't leave because we've got, we'll take care of you. We're going to manage your funds, your life for you, do the thinking for you. Now, upon realizing the hypocrisy within his cult, one member, Tony Dutoite, spoke out and left. Soon he and his wife would later be stabbed to death in Canada. Their little son, Emmanuel, who was named by DeMombro as the Antichrist, was wrapped in a black plastic bag with a wooden stake placed through his chest. So this was probably the best thing that you could expect to happen to you during this period. Now, the leadership felt that they were being persecuted by governments. They claimed to anticipate the coming of the end of the world. Now, much like what happened in the case of Heaven's Gate, where we looked at Marshall Applewhite, who, after things don't, you know, people start losing, the glam starts to wear off, and people start to learn to think for themselves again, and they start to say, this is bullshit. I don't believe any of this now. You're telling me not to do all this stuff, but then you're going to do it? This is bull crap. I'm being robbed. Once people started realizing this, this becomes a scandal. So we have the Jarrett scandal in Canada, where he's in Quebec, where he's attempting to buy weapons illegally. That's in trouble for that. Then we have members defecting and coming out and saying, like Dutoite, defecting and saying, "Hey, this is, you know, this cult is dangerous. You don't be taken in by the lies. Don't buy in." And then once you leave, you get denounced and murdered. So that didn't help matters for the Order of the Solar Temple either. Now, the leadership at this point begins to feel like they're being persecuted by the government, which, okay. Once they create their own problems, they start to claim the world is against this routine. That's to keep more control over their followers. They claim to anticipate the coming of the end of the world due to an environmental disaster and decided that some of their members should leave the earth prematurely. In Freiburg and Valais, the cult members either took their own lives or were ritualistically murdered. Some were shot in the head or asphyxiated. Some had been drugged. Many wore black ceremonial robes that had plastic bags placed over their heads, bodies positioned in a star formation with feet pointing to the center. But many bodies were set on fire. And we're going to get into that as well, because there is something very important about this use of fire that we're going to get to. The two founders, Luc Jarrett and Joe DeMombro, were amongst the dead. Now, in March of 1997 in Quebec, Canada, five more people took their lives. Three children managed to escape at the last moment and were the only survivors of the tragedy. The total number of deaths attributed to this cult was 74. Some of them were children. Now, these temples were pretty simple. They ranged from their lodges were pretty simple. They ranged from being a little bit, just basically being little camping lodges, to being ornately decorated on the inside, but humbly put together on the outside. The idea was to adhere to the strictures of the Knights Templar. Now, what does that mean? What the strictures of the Knights Templar? The Knights Templar, we talked about them briefly, were a militaristic arm of the church, and for part of their history, they were considered to be, you know, not only part of the church, but they were considered to be the arm of the church. And when I say that, I mean they were considered to be the protectors of Christianity at a distinct point in history. And they earned this through their not only their military prowess, but through their upholding of some very specific tenets. So they were supposed to be pious. They were supposed to be chaste. They were supposed to give up their worldly possessions, their wealth. They bore very specific arms. They were some of the only knights allowed to bear the cross on their shield and on their chest. So when you see in the movies all these people running around with crosses on their chest, not everybody could do that. The Templars were the ones who were allowed to do that, and they earned that through adhering to this strict moral code of being honest, even if it leads to your death, being steadfast and true to your word, upholding and protecting the law, upholding and protecting the tenets of the church, preserving not only the church but its membership, so being outward protectors of Christianity, and, you know, killing infidels is kind of helpful in that regard. So when we look at the temple at its core, at its core, some of these things. So what exactly are they adhering to in the outset of the order of the solar temple before things kind of fall apart? Well, at the beginning, their goal is to try and emulate the Knights Templar. And how are they doing this? Well, members are supposed to remain chaste. They're supposed to be pious and pray. They're supposed to be humble. They're supposed to live on as little as possible. How are they doing that? They're giving all of their wealth, all of their property away. They're taking that nice commandment of the Christ child and just giving everything that they have away to the organization, which is, in its sense, what Templars originally did. They gave up all their worldly possessions to the church and served as emissaries for the church. So, in a way, yeah, they're kind of trying to tap into that mysticism of the Templars, but kind of hard to live the life of a Templar if you aren't really adhering to all of the tenets, which they are clearly not. So when we look at this sect and why they were so shocking, it's not just the Templar ties that make them so odd and stand out so much. There is their mixture of all these different rituals, these ceremonial rites of passage, these levels. There were levels to their organization as well. So they mentioned the masters who, let's just go ahead and say it, never really existed, didn't really have masters. Affluent members only arose when Demombro and Jiray allowed them to rise, by going through these rituals, by doing what they say, basically. And by doing these things, you see that you get to rise up in the order and you get to with more responsibility and more power. Ultimately, though, the power was centralized with Demombro and Jiray. So their members basically were at the mercy of these two guys. Now, we look at the rituals. Many of these rituals included the wearing of robes, earning the right to wear the red cross on your body, taking communion, you know, from Jiray or Demombro, recognition of Demombro's children as being God-inspired, basically being immaculately conception, being product of Immaculate Conception. And if you're not familiar with Immaculate Conception, it's the concept that is put forth in the Bible that Jesus was born through Immaculate Conception, that he was born the son of a virgin, and that God simply created him into being, that there was a virgin birth. So the fact that nobody conceived him with his mother is the idea, is the concept of Immaculate Conception. So Demombro was putting forth this idea about himself and his children. Oh, my children are immaculately conceived, are the product of Immaculate Conception. They're literally God incarnate. They're going to inherit this world. But that other aspect that they tie into, this is a multi-layered cult. That's what makes them so interesting. They've got all this craziness going on. Then we get into the end of the world scenario, this doomsday prophecy that they got going on. They say that during the mid-90s, there's going to be a cataclysmic event that is going to culminate with the end times. It's going to end the entire world. And now it's time for certain people within our organization to just leave early, you know? This is that third level. So let's take a look. We talked a little bit about some of the rituals and a little bit about the beliefs. Let's take a look at some of the structure. I mentioned the synarchy of the temple, but let's take a look at some more of the structure of this organization, because there are grades that you can only progress through ritual. So let's take a look at them, shall we? Now, according to the literature of the Order of the Solar Temple, the central authority of their organization was the Synarchy, whose membership was completely secret. And this is probably those nice little masters
we've been talking about. Let's face it, the only masters in this group are DeMombro and Jure. Its top 33 members were collectively known as the Elder Brothers of the Rosy Cross, an alternative name for the Rosicrucians, and were headquartered in Zurich. The Council of the Order formed lodges that were run by a regional commander and three elders. Progression in the order was by levels and grades, with three grades per level, the levels being the Brothers of Parvis, the Knights of the Alliance, the Brothers of the Ancient Times, in ascending order. There were many organizations associated with the Order of the Solar Temple, including the International Arcadia Sciences and Tradition Arcadia Clubs, Menta Clubs, Agata Clubs, and Atlanta Clubs, all of which offered the teachings of Luke Jure both to the general public and privately to OTS members. The lodges had altars, rituals, and costumes. Members were initiated at each stage of advancement in ceremonies, which included expensive purchases, jewelry, costumes, regalia, and the payment of initiation fees. During ceremonies, members often wore crusader-type robes marked with a red cross and were to hold in awe a sword which DeMombro said was an authentic Templar artifact given to him 1,000 years ago in a previous life. And man, that guy must have been smoking some good drugs. He must have been on something, or the people with him must have been, to buy that. That is something. Here's a sword that I have had for over 1,000 years. Now, I want to get into the specifics of the mass murders and suicides and what really ultimately culminates into this, but before we do, I want to take a quick commercial break, guys. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at what leads to the ultimate destruction of this organization. We're getting through this information a little bit faster than I intended, so we're going to take that short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what really is the match to this tinderbox.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is a perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Hope you guys enjoyed that little commercial break. Now, before the break, I know I told you guys we were going to talk about what led to the demise of this group. They had a good thing going for a while, right? They got all these people giving them their money. They're talking about being related to the Knights Templar. No, no, that's not enough. So now we're going to up the ante. Now we're also related to the Rosicrucians. Oh, no, no, no. We're going to up the ante again. The world's going to end soon, and you guys got to be here for that. But now we get to what brings about the demise. So I talked about Tony DuTois' family and himself leaving the cult. This took place in 1994 in the middle of October. Now, DuTois believed that this group was becoming dangerous. He did not trust DeMombro anymore. We're not exactly sure because we don't really get his story because he doesn't last long enough to tell it. His infant son, who at only 3 months would be taken from his father at the group center in Morin Heights, Quebec, and stabbed repeatedly with a wooden stick. It's believed that DeMombro ordered the murder because he had vocally, before his members, come out and said that this baby was the reborn Antichrist described in the Bible, and believed that the Antichrist was born into the order to prevent DeMombro from succeeding in his spiritual aim of saving the world. Now, a few days after DuTois' son was murdered, along with himself and his wife, DeMombro and 12 followers performed a ritual Last Supper. Now, a few days after this, mass suicides and murders were conducted at Chauri and Salvon, two villages in western Switzerland, and at Morin Heights. 15 Inner Circle members committed suicide with poison, 30 were killed by bullets or smothering, and 8 were killed by other causes. But why? Why did they do this? After the murder of the DuTois family, DeMombro, coupled with Jure being kicked out of Quebec and his reputation being absolutely shot, DeMombro and Jure realized they were on borrowed time. The group was under investigation from the local government in Switzerland for suspicious activities. Some considered them to be a dangerous organization by this point. And DuTois and his family being murdered by this group after leaving the group made the local government want to crack down. Now, in anticipation for this, DeMombro convinced his followers that the time was now. The time was to leave now. So now it's time for us to commit suicide. Now, in Switzerland, many of the victims were found in a secret underground chapel lined with mirrors and other items of Templar symbolism. The bodies were dressed in the order's ceremonial robes and were in a circle, feet together, heads outward, with most with plastic bags tied over their heads. They had each been shot in the head. It was believed by investigators that the plastic bags were a symbol of the ecological disaster that would befall the human race after OTS members moved on to Sirius. Some suggest that these were used as part of the OTS rituals, but we can't substantiate that because it's not mentioned. And the members would have bought, and this suggestion leads investigators and others and outsiders to view the situation as this, that the members would have voluntarily worn them without being placed under arrest because they were so used to wearing them. But I think that's a bit of a stretch. There's also evidence that many of the victims in Switzerland were probably didn't have a choice in the matter, were found in three ski shallots. Several dead children were lying together in this scenario. The tragedy was discovered, however, when officers rushed to the sites to fight the fires that had been ignited by remote control devices set up by DeMombro and Jouret. The belief was that they would purify them, their souls through the use of fire. So farewell letters were left by the believers. And these letters in many cases stated that they believed they were leaving to escape the hypocrisies and oppression of this world for Sirius. Amongst the dead found in Switzerland were a mayor, a journalist, and a civil servant, as well as a sales manager. Records seized by the Quebec police showed that some members that had personally donated, there were some members that had personally donated over $1 million Canadian dollars to DeMombro. Another attempted mass suicide of the remaining members was thwarted in the 1990s. All the suicide and murders and attempts occurred around the dates of the equinoxes and solstices in some relation to the beliefs of the group. Now, another mass death incident related to OTS took place during the night between December 15th and 16th in 1995. On December 23rd in 1995, another 16 bodies were discovered in a star formation in the Vercors Mountain of France. It was found later that two of them shot the others and then committed suicide by firearm and immolation. So they shot themselves and then burned their own bodies or set a fire around themselves. One of the dead included an Olympian, Edith Bonlew, who had competed in the women's downhill at the 1956 Winter Olympics, showing just how influential this organization is. They even got a former Olympian in their cult. On the morning of March 23rd in 1997, five members of the OTS took their own lives in the St. Casimir, Quebec. A small house erupted in flames, leaving behind five charred bodies for the police to drag from the rubble. And amongst these bodies were three teenagers, aged 13, 14, and 16. The children of one of the couples that had died in the fire were discovered in a shed behind the house alive, but heavily drugged. Now, renowned Swiss musician and conductor Michael Tabanic was arrested as a leader of the Solar Temple in the late 1990s. He was also indicted for participation in a criminal organization and murder. He came to trial in Grenoble, France during the spring of 2001 and was acquitted. Now, French prosecutors appealed against the verdict and an appellate court ordered a second trial beginning October 24th in 2006. He would be cleared again in less than 2 months in December of that same year. Now, the Order of the Solar Temple is also based in Spain, especially in the Canary Islands. And in 1984, the founder of the sect lectured on the island of Tenerife. In the south of the island, he lived before his death as the leader of the order in Spain. Also, the only Spaniard who died in the suicide of the Order of the Solar Temple was a barber from the island of Tenerife. In 1998, a sect was suspected of plotting ritual suicide in the Tide National Park. Both Spanish and German police initially have linked the group to the Order of the Solar Temple. So there is some suspicion that there was groups related to their group that remain today, which is not unlikely. It's not uncommon. But look influential this group is. We had people donating upwards of $1 million to this organization. I'm in the wrong business. I've really got to start my own cult. That's where the money is, apparently. So you look at the Order of the Solar Temple, and you have two men who claim to be descendants of the Knights Templar. And eventually, Jouret's belief is that he is the reborn Christ. He is, in fact, Christ, whereas DeMombro takes it to the level of he is a Christ-like figure. So we have two guys claiming to be Christ, essentially, leading people to a path that leads them to being either self-immolated, forcefully immolated, drugged, shot, strangled, or straight through the heart. good, you know, good rule of thumb, though, guys. If you really want to make sure something's dead, staking it through the heart probably gets the job done, although I wouldn't recommend that. Now, to give you guys an idea of how many people died and how fast they died in comparison to how many members that they had, from October 4th to October 5th in 1994, they discovered 53 people who were either murdered or killed themselves and were members of the Order of the Solar Temple. The very next year, 16 more people killed themselves, and then in 1997, another 5 people killed themselves, not to mention the attempt by a group related to them to kill themselves and other people, which was thwarted in Quebec. The Solar Temple was an organization that preyed on people financially, mentally, spiritually. They played up the old glory of an organization that it seemed that they themselves didn't really have a very good understanding of. Idealistic view of how the Templar Order functioned, and they attempted to recreate this idealistic view in a modern world. When that failed, and when they were unable to make their vision come true, they changed their message to one of an apocalyptic worldview in which the world and was imminent. At this change, people became more on edge. They became more prone to violence, and others became less likely to want to stay in the cult. Hell, the world's going to end. Why stay, right? This props Dutrois and his family that attempt to leave, which leads to their brutal murder at the hands of Solar Temple members. And this eventually further spotlights the group. They were already in the news for attempting to buy illicitly acquired weapons. And then they took it a step further by murdering former members of their organization, which always red flags you when you kill somebody. That kind of hurts your rep. Now, the apparent affluence of the temple's membership, as I said earlier, challenged the prevailing conception of such incidents as the product of deprivations experienced by members and suggested a more ideological causation. In the early 21st century, this group was believed to have between 140 to 500 members, and many of these people were the elite. I mentioned before, amongst some of the victims was a guy who was mayor of his town in Switzerland. And he is wiped out. So you look at this organization from top to bottom. It's an esoteric order that's message changes from being one of a holy order dedicated to enlightenment and changing the worldview of people to let's get as much money from our people as possible. We'll create these elaborate rituals to get money, and so it becomes more of a scam, and then it evolves into an apocalyptic doomsday prophesying cult revolving around two figures that are both messianic in nature, and eventually culminates in the deaths of about 74 people over the span of a 3.5-year period. Nonetheless, the organization remains somewhat intact. According to many authorities, the Order of the Solar Temple is still classified as a still existing secret society based on the ideals of the Templars. The Order itself survived the death of its higher members. And this makes you wonder just how in the hell people could have still believed that this stuff was going to work for them. But that's one of the things that's so complex about cults. People, for some reason, get attracted to these groups They're looking for a place where they can belong. They're looking for charismatic figures to tell them what the answers to their problems are. DeMombro and Jure fit the bill. DeMombro was less of a speaker and more of a guy that ruled through fear, whereas Luke Jure was a charismatic speaker who had worked with the sick and the needy before joining this organization, therefore was able to manipulate people probably even better than some cult member leaders have been able to do in the past, simply because he was so used to working with people and knew exactly how to relate to them. He was less of an outsider and more of an outgoing personality who really was passionate about what he believed in, but passionate to a fault. So ultimately, what can we take away from the Solar Temple and their organization? Well, ultimately, there's a few things we can take away. Number one, if you're going to follow an if you're going to join an organization, make sure they know what they're talking about and make sure you know what they're talking about. Probably the second thing we can take away from the Solar Temple is that it was one of the most successful, as far as being basically a Ponzi scheme, it's probably one of the most successful ones of all time, as they reaped in several million dollars from through initiation fees, through membership fees, through donations, to simply just taking the money from their followers, because, you got to forsake everything. You're a Templar now. So you got to. So we can learn that this was a particularly lucrative cult for the leaders, at least. And then, lastly, the last thing that we can determine from the Order of the Solar Temple, I should say, the last thing we can take away from them is that despite all of these changes in their philosophical grounding and their standing, despite all the changes this organization went through to sort of get their message out there and get people involved with it, get people passionate about what they were talking about, despite all the many changes they went ranging from being an organization dedicated to upholding the Holy Order of the Knights Templar to basically becoming a very organized Ponzi scheme, then ripping off the Masons and other organizations such as the Rosicrucians and other New Age movements so they could get even more followers, playing up the exclusivity of this group, as well as we can see, a lot of the members of this organization are people that are high-profile individuals, politicians, businessmen, journalists, people of a higher standing than just your average person. These are people that have access to money, maybe not necessarily the journalists per se, but businessmen, entrepreneurs, some overly religious people who just have access to that kind of money. These are the kinds of people, social elites, that are being attracted to this organization. So it's a cult of the rich for much of its time, despite the fact that not everybody in the cult is rich, for the wealthy. Because you look at their membership, it's comprised of people that are of the higher echelons of society. They're attracted to this organization because of what they stand for, and because of what they're talking about. They talk about reviving the Knights Templar. For those of you unfamiliar with the Knights Templar, not only were they a military arm, as I mentioned before, not only were they a religious arm and military, military organization, they were a tremendously successful business organization.
And if you don't believe me, we're going to take a look at some of that as well, because it's very important when you look at the Solar Temple, because in a way they kind of did almost model themselves after them in an indirect way. Maybe not necessarily hitting the mark as far as getting, the whole let's be pious and holy, let's do all this stuff where we're going to preserve the values of the Catholic Church. We're going to preserve the values of Christianity, and we're going to promote it, and we're going to do all these good things for our community. But you know, even the Knights Templar stray a little bit. And so I find it interesting that the Order of the Solar Temple claims to base themselves after this organization, and then, much like this organization, ends up moving away from their original cause. So the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ of the Temple of Solomon, also known as the Order of Solomon's Temple, the Knights Templar, or simply as the Templars, were a Catholic military order recognized in 1139 by papal bull Omne Datum Optimum of the Holy See. The order was founded in 1119 and active from that time to 1312. Now, it was among the wealthiest and most powerful organizations throughout the Middle Ages, became a favored charity throughout Christendom, and grew rapidly in membership and power during its existence. You get a little bonus lesson today about the Knights Templar. Look at you. They were prominent in Christian finance. Templar Knights, in their distinctive white mantles with a red cross, were among the most skilled fighting units during the Crusades. They had some of the best equipment. They had some of the most some of the best training. Non-combatant members of the order, who formed about as much as 90% of the order's members. So it's important to remember that 90% of their membership were non-combatants. They managed a long economic infrastructure throughout Christendom, developing innovative financial techniques that became the early groundwork for banking, building its own network of nearly 1,000 camaraderies. I'm sorry, guys. French is not my forte. But building essentially camaraderies, which is like small estates under the control of military personnel, and fortifications across Europe and the Holy Land, and arguably forming the world's first multinational corporation. So this is what we're looking at here when we look at the order of the Solar Temple of, we're looking at an organization that is attempting to emulate one of the most successful organizations in human history. This is what got the Templars wiped out. That's why they were wiped out. The Templars were closely tied to the Crusades when the Holy Land was lost. Their support for them kind of faded. Rumors about the Templars' secret initiation ceremony created distrust, and they eventually earned the ire of King Philip IV of France, who was deeply in debt to the order because they were, you know, incredibly wealthy and just kind of loaning money out to people. Philip took advantage of the situation to gain control over them, and in 1307 he had many of their members in France arrested, tortured into giving false confessions, and burned at the stake. Pope Clement V disbanded the order in 1312 under the pressures of King Philip, who threatened to invade the papacy. The abrupt reduction in power of a significant group in European society gave rise to speculation, legend, and legacy through the ages. So this is what makes the Knights Templar so mystical and mythical and legendary. This is why the Knights Templar and the word Templar has such an air of mysticism to it, because for so long they were a fixture in Europe and the Holy Land and parts of the Mediterranean and parts of what we would now denote to be the quote-unquote Middle East, a term I find problematic, but what else are you going to call it at this point? Otherwise, nobody's going to know the hell where I'm talking about. Got to go by country to country. But from Lebanon and Syria all the way to Europe, these guys were known. They were known for their distinctive uniforms. They were known for their successful business practices. They were known for their generosity. They were known for being money lenders. They were known for their prowess on the battlefield and their ability to field much more professional army than many of the people at this time. These guys were basically the East India Trading Company before the East India Trading Company existed. So you look at this organization and you look at this, the Order of the Solar Temple. The Order of the Solar Temple didn't even get close to this organization. They didn't even get close to matching the influence and power of the Knights Templar. But what they did do was attempt to model their organization after the Knights Templar, insofar as that they attempted to have people within their organization of a elite social status. Now, the Knights Templar, despite being called the poor fellows of fellow soldiers of Christ in the Templar of Solomon, they weren't all poor. A lot of them were people that were incredibly wealthy, and that is evidenced in the kind of equipment that they had and the resources that they had and their ability to invest. This organization was founded with money, and it just made more money. More money, more problems. And that's what the Templars experienced. So the Order of the Solar Temple strove for this at their outset. They strove to try and tap into this mystical organization that they'd heard about, that they'd talked about, without really fully understanding why the Knights Templar were so successful for as long as they were, but also not learning the lesson from the Knights Templar. Now, while the Order of the Solar Temple falls apart for completely different reasons, the Knights Templar fall apart due to politics. They fall apart because the political climate changes. They made enemies of the wrong people at the wrong time. Their influence was considered to be a threat by monarchs, not just King Philip, but other monarchs as well. And even the Catholic Church is a little iffy on the Knights Templar because of their power and influence, and in many cases, their popularity. So, in that way, they do differ from the Order of the Solar Temple and their demise, because the Knights Templar, they fall apart for completely different reasons. But the Order of the Solar Temple falls apart because of their own political blunders, their own stupidity, the first of which is one of their leading members, their mouthpiece, their face that runs the place, Jurey, getting caught breaking international laws in Quebec and then being kicked out of Quebec, forbidden to come back, banned from ever coming back to that part of the world, creating a huge scandal. So already a political shade was being cast over, a political shadow, if you will, dropped over the Order of the Solar Temple at this time, further enhanced by the foolishness of Demombro when he crossed the line with some of his members and they attempted to leave, at which point they denounced these members and he had them murdered. Because nothing suspicious about a group of people leaving a cult that everybody's talking about and then coming up dead. So yet another political blunder on the part of the Solar Temple leading to their destruction. So I like the fact that we can in fact draw some parallel between the organizations, but at the end of the day, you look at the Order of the Solar Temple, they are really the poor man's Knights Templar. I mean, they're not even close to being anywhere near as successful as the Knights Templar, nor were they anywhere close of exemplifying some of the good things that the Knights Templar did. The Order of the Solar Temple essentially could be boiled down to as this: two men on a power trip who take advantage of people with money, who are looking for answers in the wrong places, and believe that by joining this elite club, they're going to benefit from it. Order of the Solar Temple was a very great Ponzi scheme while it lasted, until it ends with the deaths of 74 people who were either shot, strangled, staked, hung, or burned to death at the hands of either themselves or fellow members of their organization. Now, before we close up, I do want to give you guys some access to some good source material you can take a look at. The first thing that I want you guys to keep in mind is a book called Cults, Faith, Healing, and Coercion by Mark Gallanter. It's published with Oxford University Press, pretty good if you're interested in that. You might also want to take a look at James A. Heitz and Now, The Solar Temple, as well as Solar Temple, Cult Influence by Ancient Egypt, Tariq Hassan Gordon's work, and then Jean-Francois Mayer's Apocalyptic Millennialism in the West, The Case of the Solar Temple. These are all a good start. And finally, I will recommend another work by Michael S. Serrell, Remains of the Day. So that's what I've got for you guys. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you guys were able to unpack that. I tried to unpack it as much as possible. I wanted to give you guys some insight and into this organization, because they are a fascinating group. They are pretty pretty out there, kind of a complicated organization, and there's a lot to break down because they did so much changing during the period in which they were active. So that's all I've got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you learned a lot. Check out those books. If you're interested in learning more about the Order of the Solar Temple, I would recommend you take a look at those. That's a good jumping point for you. And do check out my new book, Gallery de Cauchemar, Nightmare Gallery, available now on Amazon. Guys, that's all I've got for you today. Enjoy the rest of your week. Catch you all next week when I interview Mountain House Band. I'm kind of excited about that. So we'll see you guys next week. Take care.